You're listening to Good Sentences, the podcast that's guaranteed to tickle your literary ear holes and make you wish you'd listened to dear old mom when she said to put down those lawn darts and learn how to read. And now, here are your hosts, neither of whom listened to dear old mom. This is Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Okay, well, thanks everybody for joining us today, and special thanks to Angelique L'Amour, who is here on our first episode of season two. Yay. And I'm as shocked as everybody else that they let us back for season two. I figured we'd probably done enough damage with season one that they would have found some way to get rid of us, but we're still here.
I think the national chaos kind of distracted them. So we were able to sneak in through the back door or something.
We can always say we have the right of free speech.
That's right.
You know, and we're not yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah. Now, well, apparently, Scott, we're going to have to set our sights a little higher. We thought we were crazy enough to get people's attention, but real life kept outstripping us somehow.
I was going to say, I had an acting teacher, Sandy Meisner, who used to say, don't give me real life. Somebody would say, well, that's what it was like. It would be like if it was in real life. And he'd say, don't give me real life. Real life is boring. And I'm like, ah, 2020. Right?
Yeah, really.
Speaking of 2020, we have happily left it behind in terms of the calendar year anyway, although we still have a bit of a hangover, I fear.
Yeah.
But some terrible news has occurred and portends the end of the UK, I think. The story broke, I believe it was today or yesterday, that one of the ravens in the Tower of London has disappeared, died, or they're not really sure yet. And legend has it that unless they keep six of these ravens in the Tower of London at all times, the British Empire will fall. They're still the British name Merlina. And so unless they find Merlina shortly, and we can look forward to even worse hijinks possibly in 2021. So keep your eyes out for Merlina.
When did the raven thing start?
Oh, it doesn't give a day. Long time ago.
I'm going to have to figure that one out because I like little bits of information like that.
It sounds like something that they probably came up with a while ago.
Turns out it was like last week. They're like, you know what?
Right.
Like, oh, we should have thought this through.
Like, you want it to be six? I'm out of here. Yep. I don't like that whole Brexit thing.
I'm going to make my own exit.
Tell you what, nevermore. I'm out of here.
Right. Right, there you go. Exactly. Oh my
God. Speaking of also moving to 2021, one thing I've been thinking about is given what 2020 was, is there anything I can take from it to make, for example, my writing better in 2021? That's one thing that Scott and I have been talking about, for example, is not only rebuilding or shoring up our brand, but becoming more productive with our writing in 2021. And what can we take from the last year to make that happen? And one of the things that I've learned last year is just being able to be productive and work under some of the most unpleasant circumstances. As I look back over last year, there was not just the national level of stress, which I think affected everybody even more than maybe some of us realized. Right. Now that I look back, I'm like, wow, I think I was suffering a lot of, you know, emotional, psychological stress over that. Schools closed. I had the children back at home, which was not something I'd planned. Unlike for the past 2 to 3 years, my entire plan, business plan, everything was focused on them going to school so I would have the time during the day. And just when I was going to put all that into place, schools closed.
Yeah,
and so I
gotta figure it was a personal affront.
It really was. I was personally.
I know the energy you put into the day you dropped them off at kindergarten the first time. You've been talking about it since 2018.
Yeah, it wasn't just terrible for everybody. I was personally insulted by the advent of COVID. Yes, but you know,
I will say that when my youngest started preschool. Kindergarten, maybe whenever she started a good 4 hours away from me, it didn't give me any more time to write. No. It really didn't. Not until maybe junior high, high school, when they were truly a little more off my radar. And I thought, you know, I had this big plan that my youngest was going off to college in August, and then I would just, you know, start. And that didn't happen. But I did write, but that didn't, you know, not the way I thought.
Right.
And then I just dropped her off at college, and the oldest is home picking up a puppy. So I keep feeling like that finish line where I get to say, okay.
Yes.
Every morning at 7, I'm going to be, you know, on the treadmill for half an hour and doing my back exercises. And then I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write. Is pushed off yet again until Wednesday, which is the inauguration. So I'm probably not going to be doing much that morning because I'll be waiting to find out if anything wonderful or horrible happens with that. I mean, I want to watch, but I want to hear his speech. I want to, you know, see all of that. But like, so Thursday, the 21st, Thursday will be the day that everything starts.
You keep moving the goalpost on me.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Well, in any case, if nothing else, it has taught me a little more patience, a little more fortitude, and more determination. And so I'm hoping that I can maintain that throughout the rest of the coming year.
Right.
You know what I found? What I found was the great lesson in having kids and trying to write. And certainly I have not published yet like you two have, but I'm on the verge. I really feel like I'm on the verge here, is that it made me less precious about the time of day. Sometimes it would be like everybody would be doing their homework and I'd go in to turn the oven on and I'd sit down and I'd write for 30 minutes and then I'd start cooking dinner. It gave me the ability or the desperation to find snippets of time instead of this open-ended, like I've got 3 hours to myself to just do, you know, to just be brilliant. And I'm not sure I'm going to be, it'll be very interesting to see Thursday, the 21st, if I actually make use of the time well that way.
Right. Yeah. It may require a little settling in for you.
It might. Yeah. And I'm at this position where I find myself really excited about where the book I've been working on is at. And so I know what needs to be done and I'm in the process of doing it. And I'm really excited by that.
Right.
And I see an end to it. I see this one being ready to, you know, let go of, and that's really exciting. But, you know, then I decided to take a college class. So
oh, that yearning for knowledge, it'll get you every time.
I just want my bachelor's so that if somebody says, come teach at my school, I can say yes.
Yeah.
Because I love teaching kids to write.
Yeah, that would be cool. What about you, Scotland? What do you think?
My 2020 lesson, I think probably my biggest single revelation was the degree to which, for me, writing is therapy. Mm. Because there were, and unfortunately, I was able to prove it almost scientifically, because there was a couple of stretches of about 2-3 weeks where it was just one of those life says you're not writing situations, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say about 4 days into it, I was really struggling just, you know, to function. I mean, I was doing okay. I was doing what I had to do, but in my head the whole time I'm thinking, so in chapter 12, I should do this. And then 3 more days passed with no chapter 12, you know, and then I finally sat down and I was like, you know, I've got the time today, but do I really feel like writing? Not really, but let's just do it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And within 15 minutes, I felt like the king of the universe, you know. It wasn't anything super great that I was producing, you know, it wasn't my best work ever, but I was working, and that feeling that had been missing for the past 2 weeks was back, you know?
Right.
So that's my lesson, is just, you know, I got to keep working.
the first half of the year for me, as far as 2020 lessons, was getting COVID and getting over COVID and dealing with a senior in high school who was missing out on a lot of things. And we still had to celebrate graduation and turning 18 and all of this kind of stuff. And having everybody in the house at once, all of us sick, and then having us all get well, but still all be back together again. It was quite wonderful timing, but I didn't feel like I had really, I didn't really feel like I sat down to write with any passion or consistency until September. And by then I could barely remember what I needed to do, but part of that was COVID fog and part of that was just time. And then I did something I hadn't done, which was I sort of, you know, I wrote in September, I wrote in October, and then I made the commitment for NaNoWriMo to actually write every single day, and I did it. And it was such a great feeling that that's what I'm like hungry for right now, right, for the 21st to say, okay, now I'm going to do that again. I'm going to write every single day until this thing is done. And I felt a part of the reason I took a class last August, September was because I took one back then too, was because I felt like I was that, if you want to get something done, find a busy person. I had almost too much time. And I needed something to structure my days because I obviously wasn't going anywhere. So I needed like get up, 2 hours of schoolwork, 2 hours of writing, go back and make sure you haven't missed anything for school. And that structure helped me to do that, to get, be that consistent.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing how quickly that time dysmorphia thing starts happening when you don't have a routine, you know, and you're like, okay, let's see. It's Tuesday. What? It's Friday?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I appreciated Governor Cuomo every day. Hi, it's 12 o'clock and it's Tuesday the 15th. And you're going, thank you. Because until you said it, it was long. I mean, one of the lessons I had, my father was someone who would have loved to have just gone off and wandered. You know, like he had that travel gene, but he had a very strict, regimented, every single day routine. And I would say he worked more from a block system than a time system. So it was like he would get up and he would take his shower and read the paper. And he would have breakfast with Beau and I. And then he'd see us off to school or he'd walk me to school, whatever age we were at. And then he would sit down and he would write. And then he would have lunch and they would write. And then he would work out about the time we were coming home from school. So always around 3 o'clock. And then he would go back and he would write some more and have dinner with the family. So it was very regular. And every single day was the same thing. Every single day was the same order. If he had an appointment, he tried to plan it around that middle of the day thing. And he also did all of his publicity like for the year in 1 month. So every June, somewhere in the summertime, was like this crazy, you know, 30 days of him going everywhere, doing everything.
Right.
It's, we're talking about going back to Scott's point about writing, whether you feel like it or not. I feel like people say, do you love to write? And my instinct is to say, yes, I do. But I've come to realize, I think I love having written more. So it's like, yeah, it's like delayed gratification. And I think surprisingly, perhaps that's kind of difficult to learn because you expect that if you're a writer, that you should love to write. And if you don't, then you may feel, oh, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with my writing. Why don't I love this? And the fact of the matter is that the act of writing isn't necessarily, you know, up on cloud nine all the time. Sometimes you're slogging through the trenches. Sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes very depressing. Sometimes you feel like whatever you're writing is a bunch of crap. And yet you get through it and you look back on it and you're like, wow, look what I've done. Just, and again, going back to Scott's point, him forcing himself to write, I've, you know, read a lot of the stuff that he's written over the last 12 months or whatever. And it is to me the best he's done. He's always been a good writer, but just stepping in there and forcing himself to do it, he has blown me away. And to me, that shows the power of what that sort of discipline and dedication to your craft can accomplish.
Are you blushing?
I'm
I tried to make him blush.
This is an audio only podcast.
Yeah, except I can see your face.
You guys can see me, but no one else
can
see me.
Luciano Pavarotti. Somebody said, you're so disciplined to him. And he said, I am devoted. I come to my music like a lover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably roughly paraphrasing, but I like that idea of devotion because I think that writing for writers, it's like starting to write is singing scales.
Right.
It's repetition. Like you just have to sit down and put your hands on the keys and let it go. But if you get into the zone, then you're like pseudo conscious while you're doing it. Like there's this place that we go, or at least for me, that I'm just writing and it's just coming out and I'm not thinking, oh, I should, and he walk, it just comes out.
Mm.
And then there's that having written, which is the part where you feel really, really, really good.
Right.
And I found that consistency that I was making in October and again in November. October was like every other day and November was every single day. December was half of it was every day. And then we got into Christmas and all bets were off. But that period of time, I felt differently. I feel like I carried myself differently.
Hmm.
You know, like I walked tall because I wasn't talking about it. And doing it sometimes. I was very committed to doing it every single day. And, you know, and watching my father, it is the great lesson, but of course he had a wife and I don't. So, you know, I am the wife, so I am the one that cooked. So it's, you know, and this year, that's been more than normal. But it'll be interesting to see when, you know, like right now, it's like, I really want to get going on my book again, but I also, I'm too fractured right now. You know, I need to get my daughter, well, my daughter's puppy moved into her apartment and then I need to get back here and just breathe again and sit down and write and try to do. I think my science teacher is going to be very surprised by me because half of these, I would say three quarters of the assignments are, how would you present this illness to a family that is just getting a diagnosis? So for me, I'm writing short stories.
Right.
I'm writing like four short stories during the course of this. It's like, how do I present this to people so that they can understand what's going on?
Yeah.
And so that, it's kind of going to be an interesting mix when I get into doing that part of it because it's again creative writing. And she's got a lot of people who are like nursing students in this class. So this is going to be fascinating. but I think that I look forward to that every day again.
Yeah. The every day for me, it's, I've said this before, I think, to both of you at one time or another, that for me, really, writing is almost pathological. I have to write, you know, it's like an addiction. But so, you know, right now, Craig and I are working on something together. So we're back to the trading chapters process. And when Craig has the chapter, which he does right now, I'm like journaling. I'm like short story ideas. I'm like, it's constant, you know? And it's funny. This is a thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. I saw a documentary a while ago about creativity and about, you know, how the mind works and how to, you know, to the makers of this documentary, their hypothesis was everyone is much more creative than they think they are.
Yeah.
And the cool thing, the thing that stuck with me the most out of it, it's like an hour and a half documentary, and I remember this one 30-second segment where they did an experiment where they had people do, they split them into three groups. One was just sedentary. They were just sitting at a desk or whatever. One was doing something like a task, but it was a mindless task, say like washing dishes or something like that. And then one group was in an active task that required a lot of thought, like say building a wall or something like that. And what they did was had them record the thoughts that came into their mind while they were doing whatever they were doing. And the people who were sedentary and the people who were very engaged had less creative thoughts than someone who is doing something mindless, a mindless task. Mm. And they didn't really give me a reason why it worked that way, but I know it to be true in my life because I made reference to this earlier. 99% of the time I'm walking my dog, something will come to me at some point, whether it's a line of dialogue or an idea for a poem or something. And unfortunately, by the time he's done and I've bagged everything and gotten home, I've forgotten 90% of it. But
well, a lot of it you don't, because I know when you tell me I'm going to go out and walk miles, I'm like, all right, he's going to come back and tell me an idea. So I wait for it. But that's funny.
I think it's interesting. I think that one of the things you learn as an actor is that one of the exercises you do when you study Meisner technique is you have an activity, something you're doing, and somebody comes into the room. It's a very early on exercise. Somebody comes into the room and interrupts your activity, and your activity needs to be something that you have to get done, not this second, but within the next hour. It needs to be something that I tried to tune a guitar and it went very badly because I couldn't pay attention to the other person at all because I had to hear the notes. So that wasn't right. A good one. But like there are other things that I've done. I put my makeup on, I've done, you know, but you're putting it on for a very specific reason. I've got, you know, like my callback for, you know, movie opposite, you know, Clint Eastwood or whatever. Right. You know, it had to be like important. The stakes needed to be high. And then the person comes in wanting something from you and their stakes need to be high. It's any good scene. Hmm. But what's interesting about it is that actual focus you place on something simple opens your mind up to react honestly to the person who's walking in the door with what they want from you.
Right.
And if you're clear about the relationship between the two characters, you know, between yourself, your activity, and that person, a lot of brilliant improvisation comes out of it. Right. So when you say doing something mindless, I think about that, and I think, you know, that's when our minds start to wander.
Right.
And my mother was a good one for saying boredom breeds creativity. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to go rake the leaves. And you're out there and you start writing poetry in your head.
Right.
Because you're bored. And so there your creativity. But if you're just sitting there like a lump, I don't know. For me, I'd be making up stories.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I did it in the, you know, I've done it in MRIs. You know, like, please, I didn't want to listen to this. Okay, let's think about, right. You know, so you start to make something up. But it's an interesting idea that the physical action makes you think of something.
Yeah,
right.
Like opens your creative process. So maybe it's good to have all those things that you can fiddle with at your desk that a lot of people use if they have ADD and they can fiddle with it, then they can pay more attention to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they have things like silly putty or, you know, things like that where it's just quiet and something that they can work and it lets them listen. I know there was a study done on chewing gum.
Mm-hmm.
That chewing gum allows you to actually listen more, but it's the same idea of right. Some mindless task
mm-hmm.
that opens up your neural pathways.
Well, here's a
I'll tell you what. Go ahead, Scott. Have a lot of teachers that owe me gum then. And I probably would have made the top 10 in my grade if I'd had my gum.
Yeah. So close. Well, one thing I've never told anybody is that I tend to fiddle with, you know, little pieces of paper and stuff. Look, I've got one right here.
Uh-huh.
I'm just fiddling. I do it all the time. My wife has come to grips with it.
Doing it with a little guitar pick holder right now.
You guys are both fiddling as yep. we're talking.
Yeah.
Yes.
My wife will find these little bits of paper, and then again, she's come to grips with it, isn't paying attention, but early on, she's like, what are these little folded up, like, pointy little papers? And I was like,
Are you trying to learn origami?
One of the things I do remember about high school, and I do think I would have done much better if I hadn't done this, perhaps, but maybe not, is that I would have two notebooks open on my desk. And one would be me writing the notes for the class, and the other would be me writing songs and poetry while I was taking notes for a lecture.
Yeah, that's a higher level of concentration than I think I could handle.
I don't know how he did it, and I wasn't a bad student. I mean, I was a solid kind of B student. Some things I got A's in.
Right.
Math, I struggled to get a B, but I did. But it was... It's interesting when I think about it. I'm like, how the heck did I do this?
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, and I did it in, oh my gosh, I did it in Miss Bennett's geometry class. Don't even ask me how I did that. That was the only year of math that I didn't have to be tutored was geometry.
Really?
Yeah, but right. I did do, you know, but it wasn't mindless.
Right.
But I'm not a fiddler. I talk with my hands, but I'm not a fiddler.
Right. Well, that's probably why you're not a fiddler, because then you'd be mute.
My hands were taken up with activity. Yes, maybe.
That's really funny. But talking about, you know, how did we do those sorts of things? I know that, you know, my brain has changed over the years. Like, my wife and I are constantly wondering where our brains and minds went over the last few years. And it's like, I used to be way smarter than this, but you can still produce, but it's like you become more focused on whatever it is you're pursuing.
Right.
And then with that in mind, I wanted to ask both of you, it doesn't have to be specific things. I don't want just to turn into a New Year's resolution thing or anything like that. But are there general goals you have for the coming year with your writing? For me, it's just, I want to get back into being a writer in terms of the business side. I really let that slip for quite a while. And if one thing I also have learned is that if you want to make a go of it, you have to treat your writing like a business,
right.
Which can be difficult for an artsy minded person because business is sort of anathema, but it's something of a necessity these days. And so marketing oneself and learning how to do it. Scott and I have been working on this, you know, together, training, going through various courses and whatnot. So really that's my, apart from just producing, it's learning how to market that production is one of my big goals.
Right.
Well, that's good. Cause then you can help me.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
There you go.
Oh, exactly. What did you do?
In all seriousness, we would be more than happy. But yeah. What about you, Scott?
I think the thing for me is to,
and it should be whatever Craig says.
Yes, that's exactly the answer.
Plus.
Right. And yes. And, obviously, you know this, but we have quite an ambitious year planned writing wise.
I'm tired already.
I know. We have so many great ideas right now, and a couple of them are basically still in development. Then there's, you know, we have the book that we're working on. Then we have, I believe the next thing we're going to do is to close off a series that we wrote, what, seven?
Yeah, I think
so. How many was that? Yeah, we're going to probably write
the final apocalyptic installment.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
That's not common these days. It's like, there's been enough. I think that's a heart. That's I'm not interested in dystopian future right now because I feel like I'm living it.
Right. Well, this is going to be more the end of the agency than the world, hopefully.
Right.
There we go. That's much better. I think.
Wrapping up all the loose ends.
For me, my plan is to write every day, but I look at the year. I still look at the year as a school year. I think also because, you know, I have a child who will be coming home in mid-April. Hopefully not before, because that would be because there was an outbreak. Yeah. I want to get my class ends March 7th. I want to have my next draft of my book done by the same time, early to mid March. My birthday is the 23rd, so that's my birthday present, is to finish it. And then send it off again to the editor I've been working with, who I really like. It's interesting. And then I want to start doing all my research again for my Revolutionary War book, because I want to get back writing that. And it's, you know, it's an interesting question. It's like, do we include the pandemic? And I'm not including the pandemic in the thing I'm working on at all.
Yeah.
But it is about some people who are isolated from the rest of the world. So it's just a very small set.
Right. You know?
One house, two houses, and that's it. But I think that I'd like to get those two things really underway. I want to spend the middle part of the year, so March to September, really working on getting myself back up to speed with the Revolutionary War book. I want to try and sell the middle grade mystery to someone. I don't really want to self-publish it, but I will if I sort of need to. I kind of want to see what happens if I send it out there.
Right.
I got blessed because the guy that I'm working with, who's my editor, is he was an agent with Curtis Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets the level of pressure I put on myself, which is to say that I know that anybody's book is going to be looked at with a critical eye. Mm-hmm. I just know that my book is going to be looked at with a critical eye on steroids.
Right.
And so it has to, I have to know that when I send it out there, it's the best thing I could do right now, and that I'm really proud of it. And when I'm there, then, and I'm so close that I can just go, okay, whatever anybody says, I don't care, because I love the book.
Right.
And know that the next project, and he understands, because he had that experience as an agent, he understands that sort of weird place that I'm in, because I'm not a complete unknown. And whereas I might be an unknown to listeners, I'm not an unknown to the publishing world as a whole.
Right.
So it adds a little pressure, but I would be putting it on myself anyway, because I'm not going to put out anything that isn't the best thing I can do.
Right.
I just like that I found someone who looks at my middle grade mystery and says, okay, so this is the next step, and you're capable of it, so go do it. And really, really gives me great advice. But, and I think my goal for the rest of the year, starting on the 21st, is to write every day. And even if it's 5 minutes, but not to consider, and this is nothing against you, Scott, not to consider journaling to be writing, because
absolutely,
I found myself doing that way too much.
Yeah.
That's not, I want to write on my stories.
Yeah.
I want to write that. And then I have another, I don't know if it's a middle grade book or a chapter book that I'm working on that I started during NaNoWriMo, that, I'm really excited, like really excited about. So that may get written over the summer too. I don't know.
I like what you said about putting out, making sure it's the best you can do, because that gives you a level of confidence. Even if you get bad feedback, you can still, as you said earlier, walk tall. And I can tell you from, you know, the reviews that bother me the most are the ones where somebody found an actual weak point that I was concerned about and brought it up. If it's something wacko off the wall, doesn't make any sense, it's a bad review. It's annoying, but you kind of move. But the stab to the heart is when you're like, oh no.
That was like when slot and they found it.
Right.
Would you say, oh, you saw that too? Huh? Yeah.
I was hoping to just forget that part.
Right. Exactly.
Couldn't you just, like, you know, let it go on by, be in the moment with the rest of the story? Yeah, I mean, I think that when we put our work out there, we're putting our heart and soul out there. Because whatever the emotions of whatever our characters are going through, we've actually gone through sitting there at the keyboard going, you know, you feel it and you live it viscerally and you have that experience. And if you could say, I have done this and technically and emotionally, this is the best thing I can do with this story today, like 10 years from now, I can't think about. Then when you give it out there, you're like, okay. And it's the same approach I took probably the last 3 years of my acting career, which was just, I look at each audition. This is the one opportunity I get to play this part. And I'm going to have fun and do the best I can do. And the rest is up to them. And I have no control over it. So I can't worry about it. So I'm just going to go have a good time.
Right.
Get to play this woman this moment and let it go. And it's the same with the book. I am doing the best I can do right here, right now. And then if you don't like it, you don't like it.
Right.
I can't make you like a, you know, if you want a dystopian, you know, end of the world saga like The Hunger Games, which I really enjoyed. I really like that series. But you pick up my book. Why?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to know, number one, what drew you to it? There's a writer's thing that I sent a piece into that was like a writing competition. Oh, I wish I could remember what it is. And you pay a fee, but it's like $40. It's not very much. And you get back critique from, I think, six people who read it and answer a slew of questions. And everybody seemed to be on the same page except for this one woman who hated the title, who hated the fact it was a memoir piece that I've been working on about sort of my spirituality and my walk through cancer as a sort of framework for that. And she was like, this isn't scary enough. This isn't upsetting. Like, why did you name it this? I don't like, and I'm like, you didn't want this book.
Yeah.
Like, you looked at it and thought it was going to be something different. And because you're so sure you knew the story before you read it, you decided to judge me on the story you expected.
Right. Yeah. Instead of the story in front of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got one of those reviews recently, Scott.
I was going to bring that up to you. Go ahead. Tell the story, Craig.
I don't know what are you talking about? Well, Possessed? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell the story because it's no big deal. We got a 1-star review from a person who didn't like the fact that we introduced elements of a new genre to an established series. Because in our book that we just released in December, there's a paranormal aspect to it. And up until then, Shelby Alexander has been no nonsense, right. I don't believe in anything that I can't see kind of guy. And one of the things we did when Craig asked me to come on and help him with the series is the one before this is called Serenity Reborn.
Right.
It's about a new chapter in this guy's life. And so basically we approach it saying we can do anything we want, you know. And
it's also our series.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
And but we were really excited while we were doing it, and we were really happy with it when it was done. So the fact that this guy didn't like it just because it wasn't a straight up, you know, guns and punches thriller. Sorry.
And that's his prerogative. He doesn't have to like it for that. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But it doesn't mean you didn't have thousands of other people who read it and go, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, we're opening up. It's like watching the X-Files from the beginning as you watch Scully becoming more and more open-minded about something. Right. Like, you can take a character and completely close them off and then change them.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing we did with Possessor, that Shelby doesn't immediately embrace what's going on. He's still not convinced at the end of the book. He's like, I'm not sure what that was. Kind of thing. So, you know, it's not like we just suddenly he's a psychic or something.
You dealt with it honestly within his character.
Right.
Right.
We certainly tried to, yeah.
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 Such is life. You
know, it's interesting because, like, there are people who didn't like it when Dad went off the narrow path of 1850 to 1900, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's the old West, is say like the end of the Civil War, really, to about 1910. But right. it might be, you could say the Gold Rush to 1910. That's the old West. And so he would, but he had always written everything.
Right.
And his short stories prove that he had always written everything. So, but it was interesting. And if you look back and you look at the sales, The Last of the Breed, which takes place in 1984.
Mm-hmm. My favorite book of his of all time.
It is also, I think it's the single best seller of all time for him. I think it's still the top selling book. And like every book passed a million copies, but like that one was just because I think it appealed to everybody who was reading the Westerns. It appealed to everybody who was reading adventure novels. It was, you know, and it was spy thrillers. And like, it really opened the door to a lot more people learning about Louis L'Amour at that moment. But a story is a good story is a good story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can take a story and set it at any point in any time, and it's still a good story. And you look at something like Outlander, or you look at Discovery of Witches, and we're time jumping all over the place, but the story is still the same.
Yeah, right.
You know, we still have two people dealing with forces beyond their control, whether, you know, it's time travel or Revolutionary War or witches and demons and vampires, or, you know, it still comes back to a human being in an extraordinary circumstance.
Yep. Is there conflict? Okay, you're good then.
Yeah.
Right. Is there romance?
Right.
That's kind of nice to add if you can. Doesn't have to be there though.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about the fact that I would say, do you think that adventure stories are a lost genre? Like Robinson Crusoe, Last of the Breed, Walking Drum, for Dad's too, like, I mean, I think all of them, I think everything's an adventure story, but when you think about that kind of genre that there used to be more of, now it seems like we took adventure stories and we made them spy novels.
Yeah.
And we took that genre and broke it. And then we have war stories, and it like the adventure as a whole became something. It became something that separated.
I think
secondary,
I think in traditional publishing, it's kind of gone. There are some indie authors that are bringing it back. You've got people like Nick Thacker and Kevin Tumlinson in particular. They write a lot like, there are characters like archaeologists, people like that who go on adventure, kind of Indiana Jonesy kind of stuff.
You know the Indiana Jones connection with my dad?
No.
No.
Okay, so my brother did a really, really, really good podcast on this. I don't know what it was on. But here's the thing. So Spielberg and Lucas read like every pulp magazine story they could get their hands on.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Didn't credit anyone because they honestly couldn't remember, I think, where they got what from. The Pit of Snakes.
Right.
Is from my dad. And the fight with the guy by the plane.
The one he ends up shooting?
Yes. Well, the guy, where they're like, he's big.
Yeah, the sword and everything. Yeah. That's my favorite.
That was the one where he doesn't end up shooting him. He waits till the plane comes. Spinning around on the ground.
Yep.
Yeah. And those two, there may be one more, but those two are actually out of short stories that Dad wrote. And Bo was sitting there in the movie going, in Raiders of the Lost Ark going, ha! I got that one. I'm checking that out. I know where that came from. And it was really kind of funny, but you're like going, these moments end up there. But I just think it's an interesting thing that we've sort of split apart adventure into subgenres, and that's what, what we're selling. And I don't know what, I like the archaeologist stories. Those are
well, we have Scott. Good news for you. That's one of the projects we have planned for this year is our first series. Yep. Our first ever series that we've started together right from scratch.
And it involves an archaeologist.
We've written three different series together, but two of them were Craig's and one of them was mine that we ended up bringing the other guy in on. But this will be our first from scratch, and it is a straight up adventure series with an archaeologist.
Yes. Okay. Where is said archaeologist based?
He, I believe, is pretty much.
We not know. It's okay.
Well, he's we've called him a freelance archaeologist, so he's not tied to a school or anything. He's, you know, basically there to the highest bidder kind of guy. So
that's the kind that gets hired when you're trying to build a building and you come across something weird.
Right. Right.
And you wanna make it maybe go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in Los Angeles in the Mid-Wilshire District, which is near La Brea Tar Pits, you cannot build a building without excavating.
Sure.
And having archaeologists and paleontologists there to see what they're finding in the tar that is underneath everything in that area, you can't even start to build. So there's this period of time where you have to, like, go in the ground, and you have to hire somebody to do that. Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily, I don't know where they get, you know, I don't know where they get what, but yeah. That is something that's very true for that particular spot. I see, you know, you're taking notes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and this,
but it's the same. There was a great TV series. It was short. It took place in Jerusalem, starring Jason Isaacs, called Dig, I think. Mm-hmm. That was about them digging out under Jerusalem.
Right.
You know, so there's certain places where it isn't about being out, you know, that where you are, it is about being hired because the law says you must excavate before right. you build anything on this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in this particular series, I suspect we have the first one pretty much plotted out, but it's clear that he's going to get involved in some fairly sketchy things where it could make an official affiliation with an institution kind of awkward.
Yeah.
So. Oh, good.
So.
I think that's excellent. When you guys plot, like, who's school of thumb? Whose book are you using? Do you have a particular?
Well, we've both started using the Plotter app that you and I have talked about.
Yeah.
In fact, we've found that by storing the Plotter file on a cloud site, we can both access the same file.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. So, and Plotter allows you to track your settings and your characters in addition to your timeline. So, in fact, I owe you a huge debt, Angelique, because in my character sheets, I have about 18 of your 25 questions.
Oh, thank you. I like hearing that.
All the ones, you know, basically when I made the template, I included all the ones that applied to what we were writing at the time. I think I might end up expanding it at some point. But yeah, every single character, I know what's in their pocket now.
Well, that's very good. You know, you never know when it's important. I sometimes give people things and then they never show up again.
Yep.
But you know, they can go back and fix that. But it like gives me something to put them through, or like a touchstone or something. The Plotter app is really, really interesting because you told me about it and I grabbed it for the chapter book / middle grade. I am still figuring out the story. And that's when I realized that I cannot plot first.
Right.
Now I understand writing together, it's really, really necessary. And I think if I wrote with somebody, I would find it really necessary, but I don't know where the story's going yet.
Right.
So it's like, I'm writing it linearly, but I'm also, sometimes I'm just writing a scene. So they're like, there's like 30 pages that's, you know, second grade, but then there's like 15 pages that's seventh. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know where, you know, where this is going to flesh out, because I have an idea for the character and I know what she needs to learn. Mm-hmm. But right. I don't know when she's going to learn it.
Right.
So I'm like, I have to figure this out, though. I have to figure this out, and eventually I'll make it go down. So I went back through, though, and I started putting into Plotter what I had already written just because I wanted to play around with the app, and it's really cool.
Yeah. It's still showing me things that I hadn't noticed before. Like the thing that I started doing recently is it has a tag feature. And what you can do is you go in that and you say, okay, what am I going to do in a given chapter? Well, there might be some character development. There might be, a twist. There might be a theme that I want to focus on. And so you just make your little tag focus on theme, character development. And then in the timeline, with just one click, you can pull up and attach those tags to the chapter. So we know in this chapter, we want to concentrate on character development, developing the theme of revenge and blah, 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 whatever. So there's lots of neat little tools in there that I'm just now figuring out how to use. Yeah.
This episode not sponsored by Plotter, although it ought to be.
No, but if Plotter wants to come in and sponsor, right, exactly. I'll be very happy to have them.
I'll talk about it every time.
I just, for me, it'll be interesting to see how I make use of that going back into pieces that I've written before and pieces that I was, working on, because when I got to November, I had sent off, my book. And so I was going, okay, I'm just going to start something brand new. And I worked on it for about 2 weeks and I started a different brand new. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I realized I just wasn't, I'd done all this research and I just wasn't ready for that. That story's not ready yet. And right. I had had this idea that writing for kids would be simpler. And what I think it is it's like taking an epic poem and making it a haiku. Right. Every word matters. Yep. And depending on how old they are, you get a little more and a little more leeway. So in like picture book, it's every single word matters. And chapter book, it's maybe every half sentence matters. And then middle grade, it's every sentence matters. So you get a little more leeway with creating something within your writing, but you're coalescing so much a story that if you had adult characters doing it would have much more of everything.
Right.
And, more description of the place and more description. So you have to figure out what's the best way to give this image without being verbose.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
What do I remember about waking up in really early on a summer morning as a kid? I remember the birds, and the twilight look of the sky and the birds. And so it's like just trying to figure out what I can do to make that. But I don't know. I think sometimes I get a little too fractured. So it's right. I try to focus on one project and finish it. And that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Ultimately, I mean, that's our goal, isn't it? To finish our projects. I'm a great starting writer.
I have a lot of beginnings.
Yes. Oh,
I have
yeah.
A lot of beginnings.
First chapter, I can write the hell out of a first chapter.
Yep. I have a folder in my writing file on my OneDrive account that's just called Ideas and Oops. Yeah. It's like I'll get three pages into something and say, there's no way to finish this. That goes in the oops file.
You just wrote yourself into a corner and yes. There is no return.
I will say there have been several times where I've been writing something else, though, and I've remembered something that was in the oops folder, and I've gone out and like, that'll work just nicely right here. Change a few things, and there you go.
I'm popping.
Yep. You never know.
That ghost story that we added to my short story book when we reissued it, that was from the oops folder. Oh.
Nice.
I find that I see stories visually.
Mm.
Like I'm watching the movie a little bit. Not once I'm really into it. I don't see the middle grade mystery. I don't see that the same way. That I'm more living as the characters. But when I start, I have a visual that comes in front of me that I'm trying to write.
Right.
I see it like I'm seeing a film, and I don't know if that's all the acting training, maybe. But it's an interesting way of trying to put on the page what the thing is in my mind.
Right.
You know, I have impulses from a lot of different places. And when I was living on my own in an apartment, I read Stephen King's book on writing.
Uh-huh.
And I had also read, he wrote in an introduction to one of his collections of short stories. I thought it was Skeleton Crew, but I don't think so. Where he wrote about Dad, and he wrote that Louis L'Amour and I would stand on the edge of a lake. This is paraphrasing. And right. He would write about the animals and the people that came here to drink water and fish. And I would write about creepy things that come out of the lake to carry off people and sheep and eventually people. He writes Westerns, I write Fearsomes, we're both a little nuts.
All right.
And, you know, and he wrote about, you know, how ideas come from anywhere, which was something that my father always said, which is something that I find myself inundated. So I'm in the kitchen and I'm by myself. So I'm living alone. And I dropped something on the floor and I had to bend over to pick it up. And my cabinets came down, but then there was a little like 2-inch underneath the cabinet that went back to the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to pick it up. I could just see in my mind this claw-like hand that was very small coming out from underneath and grabbing it. And I have to say, it took me a minute. It was paper towel. I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. Do I pick this up or do I just let it lie? I write the story because right now I'm confused by all of it. But I was like, thank you, Mr. King.
Right.
I appreciate that so much. Now I can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He did that to me one time too. When I first moved back to Syracuse from the North Country, I was reading Christine and I was in bed and it was like 2-3 in the morning. And I was staying with my parents at this house is tight. It's all spread out. So someone drove by and beeped the horn at 3 in the morning right in front of my parents' house while I'm reading a book about a killer car. That was my thanks, Stephen, moment right there.
I read Carrie in a day, and I read it lying on the floor of the room at my parents' house, the room I grew up in, when I was probably, I don't know, 16, 18 years old, and I was reading Carrie. And I remember the entire time I was reading it, I felt like I had the flu. Like I was achy and I had kind of this hot, feverish feeling and my throat was kind of bugging me. And when I was done, it was over. And I thought, that's really weird.
Wow.
Like, how do you do that to me with a book?
Right.
I don't get it. You know, 4 hours of reading Carrie and I'm like, or I think it was just one afternoon. I just read that. I just powered through it. And I was like, I'm so uncomfortable. I want to do that to somebody.
Yeah, really.
How do I do that to somebody?
Well, you guys are both in pretty well-lit rooms. I'm in a scary booth that's kind of dark and dim. So this is probably a good time to bring the podcast to an end. We're right at about an hour, if you can believe that. We always go longer with Angelique than I expect because it's so much fun. But thank her so much for coming on for our first episode of season 2. So,
well, congratulations on season 2 and thank you for having me. I will always show up.
Yeah, and we're going to keep bugging you until you change your tune.
Change your tune about that.
I won't change my tune. It's too much fun.
All right, thanks, everybody. We appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.